Hello, nerds. You're listening to an episode on the Nerdcore podcast feed. If you're feeling generous, please consider pledging to a tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenerdcore. We have tiers as low as $1 per month. Thanks so much, and enjoy the episode.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 190 of the Nerdcore, the podcast that talks that nerd shit. Thank you all for joining me again as I host for the second time in a row, the Random Germ, a.k.a. Young Yoda, and my co-host for the time being, the Nerdy Chicano. Raul, Dela.
Sounding in the way.
As he butchers Nirvana. What an ass. What an ass indeed.
Yeah. What's up, and, everybody? You can hear a little bit of squeakiness in my voice back, but I said, Brad, just take this day.
That was normal.
Huh?
I thought that was normal.
Yeah, my squeakiness is back a little bit, but tomorrow's when I should have my voice completely back. So, today we will be doing this review, and then we're going to end it with a nice coin toss.
Indeed. Today we will be reviewing Sound City, the documentary by Dave Grohl of who you may know, Foo Fighters and Nirvana. But before that, let me get to housekeeping so I don't forget.
Okay.
You can find us on Twitter at @TheNerdCores_, Instagram at @TheNerdCores. Subscribe to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/TheNerdCores.
Where
you can get wonderful exclusives such as the Mexigamers and off into Alex's Corner. Subscribe to the $15 tier and you can be a producer of the show like our friend Grayson Barker, a.k.a. Warlord Hitman 98, and receive buttons and stickers when they're released. And Raul, you may continue.
By the way, shout out to our new Patreon supporter, Alexandra Almeida, host of the Ladies of Nerdcore. But for now, she has to take a sabbatical since she's working on some design stuff that's going to take her a while. So she won't be on the episodes as often as you would like. But Alex is a $2 tier member. She pledged on the good week, Brad. We have a Patreon mini.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, Patreon mini exclusive. Shit. Exclusive movie this week, Hitchcock and Truffaut. But for you people who aren't subscribed to the Patreon feed, which you should be because it's pretty cool, this will be the last movie for y'all.
And that was a great documentary, by the way. I'm just getting throwing that out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that should be... Forgot to say, because I'm a little bit better today, so, you know, my head's kind of in the best place. Make sure you guys go in a back... Ashley V. Robinson's new project that she needs some funding for her citizenship. She needs all the help she can get, so you guys can go back it at auroraandtheeagle.com, A-U-R-O-R-A, and theeagle.com. I already pledged. It's a pretty cool comic that she's going to make. It's pretty cool, man. I can't wait to get my hands on Science whenever that gets sent to us, but I've been getting the emails from Kickstarter that it's soon. It's coming very soon.
It's getting there.
Yeah, but yeah, awesome stuff, and thank you guys for voting for us on the My Roadcast. I got the email that my interview kit is on the way, so fucking awesome.
Yeah, and that was the whole point. We kind of wanted that, so thank you all.
Yeah, so without further ado, Bradley, introduce this film.
Yeah, let me introduce Sound City. Sound City is a 2013 documentary film produced and directed by Dave Grohl, in his directorial debut, about the history of recording studio Sound City Studios in Van Nuys, Los Angeles. Again, I'm reading this from the Wikipedia page if you guys would like to follow along, I guess. Some background. In 1991, Nirvana recorded the album Nevermind at Sound City Studios. The band's drummer, Dave Grohl, was inspired to create the documentary after he purchased several items from the studio, including the Neve 8028 analog mixing console, when the studio closed in 2011. And... synopsis, Sound City Studios was located in the San Fernando Valley amidst rows of dilapidated warehouses. The little-known recording studio housed a unique analog Neve recording console and had a reputation for recording drums. Artists such as Nirvana, Kiss, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Fleetwood Mac, Neil Young, Rick Springfield, Tom Petty, Rage Against the Machine, and Slipknot recorded groundbreaking music at the studio. The film tells the story of the studio from its early days in 1969, until its closing in 2011. It then follows Dave Grohl's purchase of the studio's custom analog Neve console, which he moved to his personal studio, Studio 606. Rupert Neve is an English engineer who founded Neve Electronics in 1961, designed and manufactured the Neve 8028, one of four in the world, and is interviewed by Grohl in the film. Famous musicians who recorded at Sound City reunite at Studio 606 for a jam session and to make an album of all new original songs, each one composed and recorded exclusively for the film within its own 24-hour session on that console. It also shows album covers by some bands, Red Hot Chili Peppers' One Hot Minute, Nirvana's Incesticide, and Nevermind, Rage Against the Machine's self-titled album, and many others.
Yeah, I came to find out that Spotify does not have all of Incesticide in it on their Spotify, which sucks, because how can you not have the complete album on there? And they have like five different versions of In Utero and Nevermind, but they can't have the full version of Incesticide.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah. Either way, this is not related to this, but the best Nirvana album is the MTV Unplugged. If you don't think that, then you're fucking wrong.
No, I agree. Yeah. That is.
Yeah.
Also, Rage Against the Machine's self-titled album, their debut album.
Oh,
go
yeah.
Go fucking listen to that. Because yeah. that is my favorite of theirs.
Yeah.
I mean, Bulls on Parade is awesome, but their debut that album, my album. God, I blast that thing all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. So many good tracks on that. Of course, Killing the Name. That's always going to be in the legendary track. You got, Bomb Track on there. Ooh, that's a good one, too. There's just a lot of great songs on that album. But I got a little bit of thoughts on this film. First of all, you know, everybody knows Dave Grohl. He knows that he can do it all.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much can do it all.
He can play any instrument, basically.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about his directing skills. Look... You could tell that this was made by someone who's never made a movie before or made a documentary before. And I didn't have that hinder the way I saw the doc, but I did see some problems in the structuring of the doc.
My issue with this documentary is the kind of in the end when they're in the studio, because I thought that just went on for too long.
Yeah.
I mean, it was cool to see Paul McCartney in there jamming.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
The first half is really good.
But the rest of it... The rest of it, I'm like, this is kind of going on for too long. And, you know, and I loved the story of the studio and the Neve console and them actually bringing the engineer out and being like, yeah, I don't understand the fuck he's saying. I'm a high school dropout. And, you know, I love that part, but it was the ending where they're in the studio and I just thought it was, like, too long. I'm like, okay, I've listened enough to Stevie Nicks. Can we move on to the next person that's going to come in?
Yeah, like, first half is really good. Just the structuring at the end. Like, at first I was like, oh, cool. What's it called? Rick Springfield's here. Yeah. And the next one, you're like, okay. And then after you're like, they're really going to bring in everybody?
And they get to Stevie Nicks, and it's like, okay, it's gone too long. I'm tired of Stevie Nicks. I mean, yeah, she's great and all, but, like, I don't need to hear her for, like, 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah,
and then they show Paul McCartney for, like, 5 minutes. I'm like, what the fuck?
And I never thought I would get, you know, sick of seeing Paul McCartney, but I was like, this is kind of going a little bit too much. I'm like, yeah. I think at that point I was just burned out. It was like, wait, are we finished with this doc yet? So I think that's where the, you know, Dave Grohl's directing at least kind of takes a little bit of a hit. I'm also very, I was seeing the credits in the beginning. Why is there a director of photography and also a cinematographer? I was confused. Is that like for the people that were taking the original people who were filming, like the bands playing back then? Did they want to credit him as a cinematographer?
I don't know. I don't know if all those kind of home videos were shot by the same person.
Yeah, I was really confused. I was really confused because you see director of photography, and then on the bottom there's somebody else listed as a cinematographer. I'm like, but that's the same thing, guys.
And you know, it definitely shows that it's his first movie, so maybe he didn't know because he's a drummer. For Christ's sake. So maybe he didn't know, you know, the difference between the two, or there's no difference between the two this time. But to me, I thought I really loved the storytelling in the beginning, but it was the end that really it's like, okay, you could have cut this short. That's how I felt about this documentary.
I really liked going through the history of Sound City And, of course, Dave Grohl being in there, he had to connect it to how he made it his own studio afterwards because he didn't want to see the place die. I have a question. Like, I just want to take, like, a poll. I can only imagine how many cocaine was done in that studio during the 80s.
It's funny. It's a studio that was saved, and it's hilarious, by Fleetwood Mac. And then it was saved again by Nirvana.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And it finally got killed by Fruity Loops or whatever.
Yeah. I'm like, just imagine how much cocaine was done in that studio during the 80s with all those hair metal bands and all the glam metal. Oh, my God.
I mean, Rat said it, that they probably needed to spray down their seats.
Oh, yeah, because they were going to
come up. Get a itchy burning feeling.
Yeah. I love how they were talking about, like, you know, if people were pissing on the side, I bet they wouldn't even care.
No, they just dump shit on the carpet. And, well, I mean, that's kind of the whole aspect I think they were going for. It was it wasn't a frills kind of operation. It was you come in, you put the work in, you record, and you get your shit done. And it sounds really fucking amazing.
The only thing that I kind of didn't like as well, and this is nothing to do with the quality of the doc, and it doesn't hinder my score that I'm going to give it. I hate the kind of the elitist attitude towards how the scope of recording music changed, because it's the same argument that you would get in the film world where it's like film versus digital.
Yeah. I mean, and we know there's directors that prefer
film
over digital. We know Tarantino basically saved Kodak because he prefers film.
Yeah, but, like, if you look at Blade Runner 2049, you're like, well, maybe this digital stuff ain't that bad.
Yeah, I think, and it was nice to see Nine Inch Nails, who was kind of the band that bridged both. They were like, yeah, we can totally do, you know, tape, but look at all this fun stuff I can play with in the digital era. So, yeah. It kind of showed all aspects. You had some that were like, no, only tape. And then you had some like, nah, like digital's the future. Yeah. And then you had Nine Inch Nails who joined both.
Yeah. It's like very elitist attitude. It's like, you know, now you have people that have no, like, I believe, I'm going to quote that, what that guy said. It's like you have people now who have no business in creating, thinking that they can create. And I'm like, I can't agree with you there because, I mean, if it's more accessible, it gives opportunities to the people who couldn't, you know, put down $75,000 to go and record at a recording studio. Yeah. Now they can just
instead they can make it for $500, that.
Yeah.
But I also like that with tape, they were kind of stating it. A lot of them liked the tape because it showed the imperfections.
Yeah.
It didn't have to always be perfect. So that's why I kind of like the whole tape aspect of it because you're not going to get a perfect take, but that's what makes the song. Yeah. But I also get digital where you're right. It makes it more accessible. It makes it cheaper. And that's the whole reason the studio basically died.
Yeah. And like you also, and I'm always going to like go back to the movie example. I had Eyes on Cinema. I think the Twitter account released a video of Jean-Luc Godard editing his film. So you just see him cut, and splicing it together, roll it back in. Okay, next roll. Okay, cut here, splice it. Splice it together. Okay, roll back in. I'm like, wow, that looks so interesting, so tedious at the same time. And I'm over here breaking my head over trying to do a simple cut here on this new software that I have downloaded.
Yeah, and I like the whole reading about Kurosawa and how in like one movie he had like 400 cuts or something that he did himself because he edited it.
Yeah. Dude, I can only imagine how, like, you know, I talk about this on the new episode of The Imper Files, which you can get on Patreon if you subscribe to the $1 tier and above. I talked to Aiden about how filming on film would be the dream. But like, dude, looking at the way they have to edit that, like, I don't think I want to put that on any editor of mine.
It's what you're going for. I mean, we don't edit this because we like the imperfections. Mm-hmm. We want people to hear us in our natural form. And also, it takes a lot of effort to edit.
Yeah.
It really does. And yeah. Neither of us have that time. We have time to record, send it out to the people. And yeah. That's kind of like the way it was with the tape. I mean, cut, cut, twice, cut. Like, no one really has time like that anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, digital made it easier, and I made it more accessible as well, which I appreciate because, you know, you have a lot of talent now that probably couldn't pay for that studio time. And now because of digital, we have great artists like, you know, Kendrick Lamar now. And amazing artists like in the rock and roll realm, we have, you know, all these new bands coming up that are doing pretty good. And, you know, what's it called? All the early 2000s music, I'm pretty sure that was not on tape. That was all on digital. So, you know, a lot of the grunge that we got in 2000s, we wouldn't have gotten without digital.
Yeah, new metal, all digital. Yeah. And it really opened up for a lot of people the ability to get their art out there.
Yeah.
So digital is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And tape, I understand tape, at least from this perspective of, you know, these older bands, like Rage Against the Machine's debut album. Would it sound the same with digital? Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think you'd get all those little inconsistencies you would, because they would go back in there and they would edit it out.
By the way, what was that song they were playing the demo for? They played a demo of a song that it's like pretty, my head's just wrapped around right now. They played a demo for one of the songs, and wow, dude, did that sound very different from the final product?
I mean, they were playing some of the Nirvana too. Demos,
oh man, it, like
that were quite different.
Yeah, look, man. Big fan of Nirvana. Fuck you if you don't like grunge. I think you're lying. You like grunge.
I'm still stuck in grunge.
Yeah. And just seeing those pictures of Cobain, it just reminds me that this guy's such an interesting dude. Like, just his infatuation with not wanting fame, or, you know, just that aura that he brings to the screen every time he's on. Because, I mean, us as an American audience have really created the mythical presence of what Nirvana was. And
But remember, Dave Grohl said that, you know, he didn't necessarily want the fame.
No.
But he wanted the band to be fucking great.
Yeah.
He wanted to be Beatles great.
Yeah. I also love that.
Naturally, that comes with the fame.
Yeah, eventually it comes with the fame. And he didn't like the fame, but, I mean, it was going to come with it either way. I also like the fact that, you know, that Kurt wrote to write. He just wrote. Like, you know, there's no hidden meaning behind his songs.
No,
like,
some shit was just to make it rhyme.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I remember seeing, I saw a video of MTV asking Kurt, like, you know, where'd you get Nirvana from? And apparently it was like this big thing. He's like, nah, man, like, that's just kind of what I found. I was like, it's a pretty cool name.
And, yeah, and I think really the only one music, I know Nevermind, there weren't too many songs with, like, hidden messages. Yeah. I think In Utero, Heart-Shaped Box, that was some hidden messaging.
Yeah.
I think In Utero was more of his, I guess, poetic side, I would say, that actually had some messages thrown through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you grew up in that era, so, I mean, this is the part where I'm not going to use your age to joke around, but, like, as somebody who actually lived through Nirvana, how was that?
I was very young, so 1994.
Yeah. So like, you're like 10 or 12?
I was only like 8 or 9.
Okay.
So it didn't fully hit when he died. But as I grew up a teenager, and for some reason, my generation of music, our new metal, all that, we were just angry.
Yeah.
And that naturally went back to listen to Nirvana and Pearl Jam and the originators of this angry grunge movement.
Yeah.
Who helped contribute to new metal and our anger. And I have no idea why we were that angry back then, but we were.
Yeah.
If you cannot tell from our music.
Yeah, I don't know, man. 90s were pretty angry, man.
Exactly. And we really had no reason to be angry. Yeah. That was like, I don't know. If anything, we should be angry now because we're adults and we're poor.
Yeah. I also like in the doc, I mean, I'm going to go back to Nirvana in a little bit, but I also like the part where they were talking about punk. And the guy was like, hey, man, you got to, like, tone it down a little bit. Like, you got to let people hear the lyrics. I'm like, fuck that. I'm going to give you 50 seconds of a really good song, but really fast.
were you looking up some of these bands? Like, I looked up one of the bands. I need to look up Fear, though, because that fucking song rocked. That original one they put up, that fucking song was pretty fucking good.
they were naming so many bands, it was really hard for me to keep up. Like, most of them I knew, except for, like, you know, Fear. There was another one that was, like, a really weird-ass name. But, yeah, I love that part where they were talking about to that guy. And he's like, yeah, he goes, oh, I'm going to give you 50 seconds of a really fast song, but you're going to love it.
Yeah, like, I looked up Frankie Black and the Catholics just because I wanted to see what they were. I'm like, I've never heard this band. Yeah. No, not bad. Really not bad.
And the guy reminded, the guy looked a lot like Howie Mandel. I'm not going to lie, man. I'm sorry, sir, if you're listening to this, but you kind of remind me of Howie Mandel. So
Bobby's World.
Bobby's World. Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad that the doc, you know, I'm glad that Grohl put in there when the studio was failing, you know, because anybody else would have not done that. You know, they would have liked to concentrate on the good stuff.
You know, and I don't know if any other documentarian would have put in the freaking engineer who this whole thing revolved around.
Explaining the goddamn contraption.
Yeah, and it's, and we're just, I'm just sitting there going, damn, that has a lot of switches. Like, and then even Tom Petty gets on there. He's like, yeah, I just like looking at it.
Yeah, I look at this small ass mixer and I get confused sometimes of what I do on that. I'm looking at that shit. I'm like, yup, I'm glad I'm not an audio engineer. I'm glad I stay behind the camera.
My question is, you know, is there like instructions to that thing, or do they just like tinker around with it? Do they go, hey, that sounds pretty fucking good?
I think it's exactly the way I work with this mixer. It's just like the way I play around with it. Obviously, they got more knobs and shit.
Yeah, they're just twisting knobs and flipping switches. And yeah, that like, thing looks complicated as fuck. And then they throw the engineer on there, and he's like, yeah, and micro machines. And it's like, that's why I'm not an electrical engineer.
Yeah. So I'm glad that they put in the parts where, you know, where the studio was dying and where eventually these new bands like Nirvana were the ones who actually saved the studio. You know, I mean, I can only imagine what it was to see the band record Nevermind there. You know, I mean, you have just the one that was singing in the beginning, Something in the Way, just having Kurt completely be in that mindset to record that song, like, holy shit.
Well, and how they'd spent like all day just trying to get that song, and he couldn't record it until basically he came in and he just started strumming away, and they just shut everything off and recorded him.
Yeah, like, it's just fucking genius, man. It's like so many good bands that work there. I mean, Stone Temple and Pilots, was it? Or no, Queens of the Stone Age. I'm sorry,
Queens of the Stone Age. That was pretty cool.
That was really, really cool as well. I'm interested to see if Pearl Jam ever recorded there, but I'm pretty sure they didn't, or they probably did. They just didn't.
They weren't listed anyway. Yeah. But like Fleetwood Mac, that was kind of amazing to me. Like, you know, Fleetwood Mac didn't exist until they were at that studio, and they weren't at that studio until all these other happenings happened, and they basically saved that studio.
So, you okay, Brett? You gonna go in and out?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, cool. Yeah. So I like the doc. I do have problems with the structuring, and then at the end, and it's just you could tell that Grohl does not have experience in the movie realm. He just really wanted to tell this story, which I appreciate. It's just the way it's executed is a little bit. You know, it's fine for someone who's never actually made a movie and never actually taken a class on how to make a movie, but I just can't look past the structuring problems in the doc.
I just think the ending, it went for far too long. Yeah. I mean, it was cool to see his studio and see how he actually brought that mixer back to life and brought back all these people who were the reason that studio existed and had them record on it. But I really do think that section took way too long.
Yeah, and oh my god, I know it's a cliche thing, but like, does every fucking band, does every band or music documentary have to have a time lapse of them in a car going to the studio? Like, god, man, you know, that's the most cliche shot of these movies ever. And look, when I saw the beginning, I'm like, oh my god, rolling my eyes. I'm like, damn it, that's like the, like that one thing that's used in the act in all the movies. That one yell from that one old Western that keeps being repeatedly used and used and used. I don't know what's the name of the clip it's called, but it's the one of... Yeah, something like that. That actually hurt to do.
Don't die now.
No. But are you fine there with the review, or do you want to just squeeze out?
I don't know what more we can put on other than it was really cool to see all these bands come in and them talk about, like, Johnny Cash recording.
Oh yeah, that was the one I forgot to talk about. That was really interesting.
Barry Manilow recorded,
dude.
Trent Reznor. I mean, just so many great, and they had platinum freaking albums on the wall, just all along the wall, and it's like this place is a dump.
Yeah,
but they're right. There was something magical about this studio that just made hits.
Yeah, and I am willing to bet that Paula was not treated as nicely during the 80s with those hair metal bands.
There was definitely, probably some harassment.
Yeah.
More than likely, there was harassment.
Yeah, was that even her name, Paula, or what was it?
I don't know.
I don't remember, the Italian girl, but...
They have some more here. Dio.
Oh, yeah, Dio.
REO Speedwagon.
Rest in peace, Dio, by the way.
Rest in peace, Tom Petty as well.
Yeah, Tom Petty.
Cheap Trick.
I just thought the most interesting part about Cash, though, it's like, just imagine him coming at you and he's like, please don't call me Mr. Cash, call me Johnny. I'm like, sir, how? Like,
yeah, how are you how not you, supposed to call him?
How Mr. do you want Cash? Me to call you? Like, sir, you know who you are. Like, how do you want me to? Like, that would be so disrespectful to call you Johnny, man.
I'm just calling him the man in black. Mr. Man in Black.
Yeah. Oh, so you're the guy that they use the music from in the Logan trailer. Excuse me. Yeah, but it's a solid doc, man.
I think we've seen all very solid docs for the most part.
Yeah, two of them have been pretty much like as perfect as they can be, and beautiful docs. I'm gonna go ahead and give this a 7 out of 10. It's just solid, good work by Grohl. It's just that I've already said my gripes, just structuring.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a good watch. It's on Amazon Prime.
Wait, what the fuck? It's on Prime?
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me! I searched it up, and it wasn't on there for Prime.
No, it should be on Amazon Prime.
I watched it on Vudu with the fucking ads.
No, it was on Amazon Prime.
Gotta be fucking kidding me.
So, if you guys want to watch it, it's on Amazon Prime and apparently Vudu
for free with ads.
Yeah, but I think it was a solid doc. I enjoy it when I watch it. This is the second time I've watched it. But yeah, I give it an 8 out of 10. I think it's a solid doc.
Yeah. So that includes the review. So you got the coin toss ready?
Let me find a coin.
All right. Well, in the meantime, let me go ahead and pull up the picks, because we've got some cool picks here. Brad will be reading his, and I'll read mine. But by the way, guys. I want to give a shout out to Brad for hosting. It ain't easy as it seems, but my boy should be back to being normal tomorrow.
Yeah, and hopefully I haven't sucked. Hopefully all of you have enjoyed it. No, Raul should be, I'm pretty sure, almost 100% tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm at like a 75 right now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I got a little bit.
Yeah, I much prefer you hosting.
I don't know where that came from.
What was that? Was that like a fart burp? A furp?
That was I was laughing, but my, yeah, whatever, Brad. You have the coin.
A furp. I'm trying, there you go. I was trying to find the structure so I could pull up my picks.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a coin. So it's the Canadian one again. You got the queen for heads and a polar bear for tails. So,
all right.
Call it.
So, first of all, tell us your picks, and I'll sell mine after.
Oh, Okay, so my picks for 90s film month are Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Crow, and for Patreon mini, Good Will Hunting.
All right. So then my picks are Robert Rodriguez's From Dusk Till Dawn, Boogie Nights from Paul Thomas Anderson. It actually has a good performance from Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, and then my Patreon mini is actually... I wanted to go with a foreign film, but then I looked up those two films, and you cannot find them anywhere without having to pay a good penny for the rental. And I'm going to actually make it a little bit easier for Brad this month if I do win the coin toss. My Patreon mini will be The Sixth Sense from M. Night Shyamalan. It's on Netflix. Maybe this is another one that can change my mind of how I feel about it, because I'm not a big fan of The Sixth Sense. But hey, I wasn't a big fan of Unbreakable, and I changed my mind on that.
Yeah. It's quite a possibility. Mm. All right. So I got the coin, heads or tails roll.
I will take the tails.
All right. Flip. It is heads.
All right. So it looks like this week, so first we will go, so you'll go first. So we'll be doing TMNT next week.
Yes. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, baby.
Yeah. And then after that, we'll be From Dusk Till Dawn. And then what's it called? And then The Crow after that. And then Boogie Nights to end it with the major mini being Good Will Hunting. I'm ready to cry that with that week, with that movie, with Good Will Hunting. That was a really emotional one.
Robin Williams, baby.
Really good
and
performance
Matt
by
Damon.
Yeah, and Ben Affleck as well, right?
Batfleck.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Am I ready for 90s film, man? So jump up and get down.
All right, House of Pain.
All right. So this is going to be interesting, guys. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening. And we will see you tomorrow. Well, we won't see you, but you will listen to us tomorrow when we do the good old Game of Thrones Season 6 review. And then on Saturday, you get Season 7 review. So, Bradley, you know what to do. I'm about to sneeze. Oh.
All right, Roel. Bless you.
Thanks.
Thank you for being a co-host again for this episode, at least. Thank you to everyone listening out there. Thank you to all our Patreon supporters. We truly appreciate it. And I guess in the next episode, I hold a door. Young Yoda out.
Nerd Chicano out.